Welcome to session one of the PDH online course on simplified short circuit calculations. What we're doing is reading the textual material that you would download if you went to the website and decided to take the course or decided to review the course. Different people learn better by different methods. Our goal is to make this course available in audio form for people who respond best to audio presentation. Since the substance of the course is a set of Excel tables, that's going to be a challenge for all of us. Certainly, the textual material that describes what's going on is central to the course, so this is value. I'm not suggesting that this is a mistake to approach it this way, but I think the major value is from studying the tables. Now, let me provide a warning at this point. I'm trying to visualize your situation, and I hope you're not driving down an interstate highway at 65 miles an hour, because this information is intense, and you'll want to think about it. I hope you're not picking up the tables and trying to run your finger across the line to see the value we're talking about as you're driving down the highway at 65 miles an hour. But if you're doing this in the back seat, that's totally satisfactory. Follow your own best decisions on this. I'm sharing my thoughts with you, which is a little bit of what we're going to be doing today. In addition to reading material, if I hear something that doesn't sound quite right to me, I may stop to elaborate a little bit beyond the written material, because I've done this before on other courses. But as I say, our goal is to read the material that's in the presented course, and again, do a little bit of judgment on it, whether it makes sense or not, and elaborate if need be. So, in the front matter of the course, before you get into the content, we say course description. This course offers a simplified method of calculating available short circuit current on a commercial or industrial power distribution system. The calculation is required by the National Electric Code in Section 110.9, interrupting rating. It's also required by OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, in order to prepare detailed arc flash warning labels with joules per square centimeter and personal protective equipment level. The course is a set of lookup tables prepared with commercial electrical system modeling software and accompanied by coaching on how to use the tables correctly. A multiple choice quiz is included to provide confidence in the learning achieved. The course contains front matter, that's what we're doing now, which superficially discusses the content, the intended audience, internet locations for follow-up pursuit of the topic. The core content is two PDF documents. The first is a complete copy of the lookup tables for determining available short circuit current. There are 15 tables for 15 different transformers, 8 columns on each table for 8 common distribution feeders, 10 entries in each row for 10 reasonable feeder lengths. The second PDF document is a guide for use of the table. It's a summary of the guides provided with the IEEE spreadsheet program and the guides provided with commercial system modeling software and courses in short circuit calculation. A multiple choice quiz is included to provide confidence in the learning achieved. The course is intended for practicing design engineers who must select electric power equipment early in the construction project. It's intended for architects and design supervisors who perform a reasonableness test on the finished design. It's intended for construction managers and field inspectors who wish to avoid unpleasant surprises during startup. It's intended for contractors who wish to avoid delays by use of intelligent requests for information. The primary benefit to the audience is that the method presented makes it easy to comply with the National Electric Code and Occupational Safety and Health Act. Secondary benefit is that the guidelines included help everyone in the project do their jobs better, with more confidence. The National Electric Code requires field marking to warn qualified persons of potential arc flash hazards. That's in the 2008 National Electric Code, Section 110.16. Note that it does not require the design engineer with the system one-line diagram and software tools to compute the arc flash magnitude. However, it requires the installer with a screwdriver and a pair of pliers to prepare and apply the label. The almost universal interpretation is for the designer to include a specification for the contractor to perform and submit arc flash calculations, prepare the labels, and attach them. When it happens, the contractor usually hires an outside engineer to perform the work. Unfortunately, very often it doesn't happen. That is, the labels are never applied. And nobody responds to it. That's what amazes me. We argue about it, we talk about it, and then we pay the contractor, and he goes on to his next job, and we've got a plant with none of the required labels applied. The course offers a simplified first step towards arc flash calculations. Several vendors offer no-charge online computers for arc flash, if the available short circuit is known. There is an apparent ambiguity that the National Electric Code does not require numeric values. OSHA does. Regardless of the fine point, the specifications to the contractor is to do the calculations and provide the detailed arc flash label with numbers. This course is intended to offer a simplified method for calculating short circuit current on a commercial or industrial power distribution system. Calculation required by the National Electric Code and OSHA. The course includes a set of lookup tables with commercial electrical system modeling software accompanied by coaching on how to use the tables. Three steps in calculating available short circuit current. And I'm going to repeat this again and again because the calculations are of no value if we don't have the proper data to work with. I mean, you can spend an afternoon or days doing the calculations and have just bogus results, things that not only don't have the right answer, but they actually suggest wrong answers. So we're going to spend perhaps a little more emphasis on this. The three steps in calculating: collect the field data, utility available short circuit current, transformer KVA and impedance, feeder type and length. Now again, utility short circuit current, we're going to talk about this, perhaps even beat it to death. It's real hard to get. When we say it's essential, that's kind of tongue-in-cheek. You can go ahead without it, and you can get good answers without it. You actually get a safer answer without it. The only effect the utility short circuit current can do is reduce the available short circuit at the plant. Now, what's going on here? Well, when we don't know the utility, we assume it's infinite, that there are no limits on the current you can get from the utility. Therefore, the only limit is the transformer impedance in the plant and the feeder impedance in the plant. So if we know there's impedance in the utility, it reduces the current available, and it provides a lower value for the available short circuit current. Now, a lower value for the available short circuit current saves us money because we can buy lower interrupting rating on the equipment and save money with the lighter duty equipment. If we don't know it, we have to assume the higher value and we have to buy the more expensive equipment. Again, I say, transformer KVA and impedance. Once again, we will just beat this to death. If you don't know the KVA and you don't know the impedance, you don't know enough to do the job. Bite my tongue. Early in a project, you don't know the transformer KVA and impedance. So you choose a number. A nice number is 1,000 KVA, and if it's wrong, then you buy a bigger transformer. A nice number is 5.5% impedance. Awful lot of transformers are 5.5 or 5.75. So yeah, if you don't know it, you can go ahead and do the job. You must go ahead and do the job. You don't know everything the first day of the job. But to get a valid answer on the available short circuit current, you need the transformer KVA and impedance. Lastly, you must know the feeder type and length. It's not a short circuit calculation if you haven't identified the wire that's taking the power from the transformer down to the load. And we're going to assume that there's a fault at the load. But we need to know the kind of feeder that's going from the transformer to the load. And when I say the feeder type and length, usually we mean copper conductors in steel conduit. Doesn't have to be copper conductors in steel conduit, but again, usually it is. Other choices available are aluminum conductors, aluminum conduit. A PVC conduit, very, very popular. I'm seeing people use that inside currently. Never saw that before. PVC was usually just buried, but again, I'm seeing it inside. So inexpensive, easy for the contractor to install, and it seems to work. And the length, we need to know if it's 100 feet away or 1,000 feet away. You can't do the calculation without it. The other kind of feeder is bus duct. Now, if I'd done this course 2 years ago, I wouldn't have included bus duct. But I've been working for a large auto company, and they use bus duct exclusively. That's how they get from their transformer out through the plant. Then wherever they have a machine, they plug in a bus switch with a fuse on it and go down to the machine. I've learned to love bus duct. It's quite expensive, but tremendously flexible. It's easy to install the first time, and it's easy to change your mind down the road. Rip out one connection, put in a new connection, and you do it in an afternoon. Again, it doesn't take 2 days of planning and a crew, and you bring in a guy with a high lift and do it. Very nice. Okay, step two, run the calculations. Use the commercial system modeling tool with data library, or look up the transformer and cable characteristics and use the IEEE spreadsheet, or look up the transformer and cable characteristics and use a manual calculating procedure, or look up the answer on one of the tables provided in this course. Now, just from this level of introduction, you can see that it's going to be a lot easier to look it up on a table. So we've got to worry about the caveats, the things that get in the way of using the table successfully and accurately. And we will do that. That's what we're here for. But the other choices are to do it manually. I mean, it's always available. And we're going to do a little bit of example on that to see how to do it manually. And you might want to do that even if you've got one of the advanced methods, just to see if you have confidence in the result that the computer or the spreadsheet or the table is giving you. And finally, apply reasonableness tests to the results. Because it is, both humans and machines make mistakes. Included here are a number of easy approaches to assure that the final answer is a good answer. The theory behind calculations of available short circuit current. Short circuit calculations are not mysterious or difficult, but they are overwhelmingly tedious. You will find that they are overwhelmingly tedious to do it for one transformer and one feeder. If you're putting in a main distribution panel and a number of loads out there, every time you do it, you start banging your head. This is just not something fun to do. Tedious is the word I like. Industrial or commercial electrical distribution can be summarized by a drawing that next appears in the written version of this. The drawing shows a utility at the top feeding into a transformer, feeding into a switchboard or panel. If the panel is connected by a protective device to a feeder cable or bus duct and goes down to a panel or a motor control center or direct load. This is called a conventional one-line diagram, and the fellow who drew it is Tom Mason, and he did it on December 2nd of 2008. The notation here is the notation I've been using for a long, long time. Utility is a little Y, just showing something feeds into it. The transformer is vaguely representative of windings on a primary and secondary. The switchboard or panel is a horizontal line indicating a bus. Connections are big old dots to show that it's connected, not just passing over it. Protective device is a circuit breaker, which we're not going to talk about protective devices at all, so it doesn't matter if we're talking fuses or circuit breakers, but I like to draw circuits. It's more fun to draw circuit breakers, and I apologize to all the busmen and the Ferenc Gould people in the audience. Feeder and bus duct is just a line connecting one piece with another, and I drew a box to represent a panel or motor control center or load. And we will identify the fault as being at the incoming terminals on the load, motor control center, or panel. This is what electrical power designers see and think. Obviously, it's simplified from the equipment actually installed. However, the simplification continues. You know that the utility is made up of a generator somewhere, lots of cables and some transformers. We combine that all into a single ideal generator and all of the impedance lumped together at the service. Everything upstream, a local transformer and the service cable, become just two numbers, voltage magnitude and impedance magnitude. Now, there is just a little more to this, and we'll talk about it. But when we look at the utility, we look at the voltage magnitude and the total impedance magnitude. The transformer has only two characteristics, size and KVA in impedance. Size in KVA and impedance in percent Z. Again, there's just a little more going on that we will look at. The switchboard is idealized as a lossless conductor. Now, this is a very, very difficult concept for people who first encounter it, because they know that switchboards have a milliohm impedance. If you've ever had trouble with a switchboard, you rent a test set or bring in a contractor that's got the test set, and you measure the milliohms. It has resistance. It has inductance. And you measure this when you need to know what's going on for sure. But in short circuit calculations, we assume that it is an idealized, lossless conductor. It is not part of the short circuit calculations. The protective device, circuit breaker, fuse, is another idealized lossless conductor, as is a motor starter if you get close to the load. Not only is it lossless, but it does no protection for the short circuit calculations. The feeder cable has three characteristics: type, size, and length. We will consider only copper conductors in steel conduit and standard copper bus duct. We will talk, though, about adjustments for different types, sizes, and lengths. Now let me repeat this, because this is an assumption of the course, and it might have gone by too fast to grab a hold of easily. A feeder really has three characteristics: type, size, and length. But we're not going to look at type. Type is always going to be copper conductors in steel conduit. So we're going to say a feeder is fully defined by its size and length. That is the KMCIL or American wire gauge and feet of length. The panel or motor starter is not considered in this course. We apply a fault at the end of the feeder just inside the load. Short circuit withstand of the load is either greater than the available short circuit current, which is good, or less than the available short circuit current, which means the thing blows off the wall. And probably there's somebody there, and somebody there is not going to be happy. Even if he is a very lucky fellow, he is going to be scared pretty good by all the noise and the fire and the pieces blowing across. And by the way, the people who are interested in this, collect up pictures of the results of a fault. And the results of a fault are a lot of black and a lot of holes and, you know, burned off pieces. I mean, it is really a catastrophic thing. Short circuit modeling software. An industrial or commercial electric distribution system can be graphically represented by the screen print that is attached next in the written version. And it says, typical short circuit model from Easy Power version 8.0.2.303B, prepared December 2nd, 2008. Now, Easy Power is an excellent program. ESA is the name of the company. I'm sure it stands for something, but I think their URL is just ESA.com. Actually, I think it's EasyPower.com. They actually are on the net by their product name. They're located someplace in Oregon. Real nice people that talked to you on the phone. They said they were happy to have me use it for this course, and they offered to help me if I had any trouble getting it to work, because there is a certain learning curve associated with learning how to use this software. I found it almost intuitive, and I did not call him up to ask about how to use it. I was able to use the manual, which is a superb manual, and the online help. And it is intuitive. You click on things, and it tells you about the things. I mean, really, it does work. Now, this is not an advertisement for Easy Power. It is a personal recommendation. The stuff works. There are other good products out there. SKM, an awful lot of people I work with really, really like SKM. I haven't had the chance to use it. I can't endorse it personally, but I plan to get their demo and try it out, and maybe the next time we write this course, I will endorse it. There's another place called ETAP, Operations Technology Incorporated, I believe is their name, and they have an excellent reputation also. I haven't used it, can't say anything about it. The one we used for this course is Easy Power. And by the way, that's a quiz question. Which one did we use? We used Easy Power. And again, this is not a go buy Easy Power today. This is sharing personal experience that it works well, and I can personally recommend it as working well and solving problems reliably. It's not saying it's the only thing out there. It's not saying it's the best thing out there. It's the one I'm familiar with and can tell you about. Now, as we look at this picture, the picture is similar to the previous picture, but not identical. And people who are just starting out in this business get awfully upset that conventional one-line diagrams drawn either with a straight edge and a pencil or AutoCAD or with a drafter who knows how to use AutoCAD well, they look different than what you get out of this modeling software. Now, they only look a little different. In fact, if you compare the two diagrams, and that's why they're both included in the course, so you can compare the two diagrams, you see that they have identical elements. The difference is there's a lot more information on the modeling software, the one-line diagram that's created by the short circuit calculation program. First, they use a slightly different symbol for the utility. They're using heavy dashes at the top, just a short section of heavy dashes, and they've got a lot of labeling on it. It says util 1, 100,000 MVA, 150x over R. Then there's a short line, and there's something called bus 1, and it says 13.8 kV. Now, actually, if I were doing a one-line diagram to put into a construction document set, I would identify the voltage. That's one of the absolute rules. These people want to talk to me, and we're not going to do business today because we're doing a course on PDH online. I would identify the voltage level. Absolute rule for making one-line diagrams that you have to identify the voltage involved. Would I put a bus between the utility and the transformer? Probably not, but I would identify the transformer by its voltage, the 13.8 to 480 volts. In this drawing, they have a symbol almost identical to the one I used on the conventional one-line diagram. They call it TX1. It says 500 kVA, 13.8 to 0.48 kVA, 2.5%. In addition, they've got the symbols delta on the high voltage side and grounded Y on the plant side. And again, this is the right way to do a one-line diagram. I usually don't put that in because usually the utility's providing the transformer. The contractor isn't really that interested in the detail, and I don't include it. On a commercial one-line diagram, you're supposed to indicate the transformer size and impedance. The reason is, the real reason is, the plans inspector who gives you your building permit looks at that to see if you've got a good design or not, and he needs to reference it against what your short circuit current is. And the transformer is the primary criterion for the available short circuit current. That's why the modeling is so interested in that, and they tell you what they're using for their calculations, and why people who are doing it manually are very interested in that also. One of the things we're going to say before we're done is, no matter which method you use, you apply a reasonableness check, because it's very easy to calculate what the available short circuit current is on the load side terminals of the transformer, and that is the highest current that's going to be anywhere in the plant fed by that transformer. Well, therefore, anything downstream of it is less current. So by measuring the terminal short circuit current, you're off to a good start. You've got a criterion that cannot be exceeded, and it's a reasonable test for everything else in the system. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention this. Where it says TX1, that's what it says. If you let the computer decide, it's going to call it TX1. You can click on that and change the designation. You can say plant transformer 3 northeast corner, and it'll accept that text. The software is, I won't say forgiving, it's making it easy to do it without a lot of attention. It's making it easy to accept more attention to put more information into the drawing. On the load side of the transformer is bus 2, which is a big, heavy horizontal bus. Well, that's the switchboard or panel board we talked about before. And again, it's assumed to be lossless in the short circuit calculation. Below that, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 feeders, so 8 feeder breakers, and 8 feeders coming off of the switchboard. In each case, I put a circuit breaker in. The program does not use the circuit breakers, so there's no reason to put it in if you're doing short circuit calculations. I put it in because it doesn't look like a one-line diagram without feeder breakers. I also put it in because if you're actually doing this, short circuit withstand is only one of the tests you perform. You do load flow tests and you do coordination tests. And for the coordination test, time current coordination, you need the circuit breaker, you need the circuit breaker characteristics. Now, the first time I did this, I entered some circuit breaker characteristics, but then it dawned on me that it had no effect on the results of the calculation. How did it happen to dawn on me? I changed the values and none of the results changed. So we're not going to talk about circuit breaker characteristics because they're not part of short circuit calculations. Okay, going down one of the feeders, we see some very dense text at the end of it, and I'm having trouble reading it on the screen because it's so dense and so small. And by the way, this is a very real problem with short circuit modeling software. I'm working on a current project that we've got a question about the time current coordination, so they printed out the drawing and we all sit around the table and look at it. This drawing is 2 E-sheets large. Now, the other name for an E-sheet is a bed sheet. I mean, it's a huge thing. I think it's 3 by 4 feet, just monster huge. And it took 2 of these sheets to report the model for the plant. And this is get down real close to it, almost with a magnifying glass, to read each of the text entries. So it is a problem to read this information. Thank goodness on a computer screen, when you're doing the computer modeling, you can zoom in very, very easily and read it with no problem at all. And of course, you can double click on it and bring up a database entry screen where it's much larger and even has notation on. We will look at each of these entries. At the end of the feeder is a horizontal bar. In this case, it's called bus 4. And below that is load 1, and it says 0 MW and 0 MVAR. And again, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of these feeders on the particular model that I executed to see what's going on if you have a 500 kVA transformer with 2.5% impedance. Now, this model is, and zoom in on that, 200 feet long feeders. So I've got 8 feeders, each 200 feet long. And I record the short circuit current. Okay, that's what's going on in short circuit modeling software. We will discuss this again. Matter of fact, in the written version, the guy who wrote it described each of the things I did. And don't you think it's a value to go over it again, perhaps using different words? So when we come back from our break, we're going to look at the short circuit model again, the written text that went along with describing what the picture looks like.